Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You guys remember Kevin Powell used to produce the show?
Mm-hmm.
He says, listening to Rowan Anna yesterday and driving back from the Illinois Patriot Education Fund golf outing, and I heard Rowe say something about, we got some dating deal set up for Kevin he doesn't even know about. So Rowe apparently has gone out and found women to bring in for a Kevin Powell dating game.
Isn't that illegal?
Well, I don't think he's pimp.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he's pimp Rowe. But, God, as much as Roe likes to dress up pretty, imagine what his pimp outfit would look like.
Oh.
But apparently this afternoon, or at least sometime this week, Roe will be holding a dating game for Kevin between 3 and 7. So you should listen every day to Roe and Anna DeVantis. But now we're throwing an extra incentive because our friend Kevin is being held up for dating ridicule.
Boy, no kidding.
Yeah.
And Kevin's cool with this? He's all for this dating game?
I don't know if he called for advice. I basically told him, I said, look, you left the show, dude. What do you want from me?
Right.
No, I told him that it's going to be just fine. Just fine. Just fine.
You think that's really why Roe wanted Kevin on the show?
To meet women?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, for Roe to meet women?
I don't mean for
Roe
to meet women. I mean for Kevin.
Kevin for Roe? I don't know. I think it's just been a happy accident. I just think it's kind of worked out that way. And, Kevin's dropped 35 pounds, I think.
Yeah.
He looks great.
Yeah, he looks great.
Fantastic.
He looks fantastic. So, ladies, Kevin's available at 6:11. I'm back from Springfield. I was in Springfield, as you know, 10 minutes ago.
And nothing happened.
Nothing happened. The continued malpractice of the state of Illinois continues against you. So here's what I want to do today. And you can text in your pledge at 312-981-7200. This on the heels of Donald Trump's 9-year-old temper tantrum that he threw yesterday against the media. We will raise as much money as we can for the state of Illinois today. So everybody grab their purse or their wallet right now. Krasanich, where are you going? Get your wallet, man. I have cameras on the seventh floor as well. I have in my wallet right now 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, my God.
I got $103.
Jeez, money bags.
I will pledge $103 to the state of Illinois. Well, let me back up for a second. First off, we need to find the most responsible person on the show as far as managing money goes. And I know it's not you or me.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't like change.
Dave, how do you pay your bills? Are you pretty responsible?
I am. Okay. But I don't know if I really want to take on this.
Dave, it's for the state of Illinois.
Steve, okay. All right.
Yeah. No, but he doesn't drink while he pays his bills.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jake, are you pretty good at handling your bills?
Yeah, I'm actually old school and still pay it through the mail.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm that guy. Yeah. Did you hear Mary in the background?
That's outstanding.
I am that guy.
You are.
My husband does it,
wow.
too.
And
so
I have $6.12, by the way.
At least,
so that's going.
At least we know where to get a stamp if we ever need one.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how everybody that sits in that chair is like 40 years older than they appear to be?
Weird.
Like Kevin would read the newspaper, the actual newspaper.
Yeah,
the only 25-year-old or 26-year-old America still to do that.
You cut out clippings.
All right. I don't know. I guess Jake's maybe the leader in the clubhouse. Sandberg, are you responsible when it comes to the bills?
She just can't write them out.
I'm very responsible.
But you're all digitally hooked up, right?
What's that?
You're all digitally hooked up?
Oh, yeah. I don't actually deal in cash.
Yeah.
Thinking Jake.
I do all online.
But I want people to understand this. We're not sending this money to Springfield. We're giving it to the person I deem most responsible on the show to pay the bills for the state of Illinois.
Okay.
Okay, but if you give it to me, I might buy sunglasses.
That's a good point. So let's go to Jake. Jake is still the leader in this. All right, Grzanich, how much money do you have?
I have a dollar bill and a $25 check from jury service.
Okay. Well, you can sign that over to us.
I can,
so
yes.
So that's $26.
Yep.
How much do you have?
I have a crumpled up $5 bill. I don't carry a lot of cash. I mean,
I haven't established a way for us to take credit cards yet. So.
Okay. Well, since I can't do Apple Pay or on my phone, I will do a
$5.
Crumpled up $5
Dave,
bill.
What do you have?
My wallet's upstairs. Oh. I think I've got about $6, all singles.
That's fine. It's fine.
Why do you
We can download that app that lets you take credit cards with your phone.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, we will do that. You know, as this really good plan of mine comes together. Mary Vandeveld, how much cash do you have?
I have a lot of coupons.
Can we use that for anything?
I don't think coupons are going to help. Well, how much actual cash do you have?
I think I have about 9 singles and a bunch of change.
What's a single? Yeah. Y'all go to strip clubs?
What are people doing?
Dave must have had a real good birthday, huh?
Come on.
I have a lot of change.
Marionette are going to the strip club, and then they'll decide kid of the year.
All right, let me do some quick math here. We got 9 from Mary. How much from you, Gersanis? 26, did I say?
26, yes.
26, got 103 for me. Dave, you think you have $8?
I can run over to Walgreens to the ATM and get some more.
Well, you may have to, but how much do you think you have in your
wallet? I got about $6.
Six. Yeah. Andre has 5. Jake, what did you say you have?
$6.12.
Sandberg, what do you have?
$40, even.
Sandberg has 40. What about Bennett? And don't think the millennial gets out of this.
He has no money.
Because he's young?
No,
because
he's a millennial and he doesn't carry cash.
He has no cash at all.
Yeah, they use their debit cards for everything.
See, that's why I relate to the millennials.
And again, this is more money than they've appropriated for a budget in Illinois so
far. That's exactly right. Yeah. We have $195. We have $195 so far. Now, that money will be given to Jake, and Jake will determine which bill is paid first in conjunction with State Comptroller Leslie Munger, who we like. But Munger's got enough on her plate. So we're going to take some of this off and start paying the bills. So we're going to look for the first $195 bill that needs to be paid by the state that hasn't been paid, and we'll pay that.
Since we're about $7 billion out of whack, what do you think $195 will pay for?
I'm not sure, but I know the state owes somebody $195, and they haven't been paid. I'm just trying to do my part. Where Springfield is doing nothing, we're going to do something. And so far, we've raised $195. Now, text line 312-981-7200. Pledge whatever money you're willing to pledge for Mike Jacobson to pay the bills of the state of Illinois, the last responsible man left in the state of Illinois to pay the bills for the state. At the end of the show, we'll determine how much cash we've generated from the listeners, and then we will go to collecting that and go from there. Now, in about 6 months or so, I will hold a press conference.
Oh, okay.
And at that press conference, I will be asked questions on where the money went. At which point I will say, I'm glad you asked, and then I will lay that out in an adult fashion and say what we were able to pay, collect, and what we didn't pay or collect.
This will be a whole new press conference.
Yes, I won't call anyone sleazy. I won't call anyone weasels. Because here's the thing. I'm making a promise. And as a promise, I should be held accountable and responsible for that promise. So $195, I got to say, it's a good start.
Texter says that it'll pay for 20 minutes of interest on the current deficit.
Okay, 20 minutes. Check it off. Woo-hoo. 20 minutes.
There you go.
What are Eric and Kathy doing this morning? Mm-hmm. Huh? Did they pay for anything? I don't think so. Oh, wait, that was cheap. I shouldn't have done that. That's like, what did Hillary give, right? Yeah. I take that back. Eric and Kathy are delightful people.
This is very noble of you because you weren't even really elected by the people, yet you're stepping up to represent the people.
I feel it's time to appoint people. That's why I'm appointing. Forget about elections. I'm appointing Mike Jacobson, the financial. What do you want? You want a title for this? What do you want to be called?
I'll go CFO.
The CFO. The CFO of the state of Illinois.
Can I get controller?
No, Leslie's already. Leslie. And I'm working with her, Dave. It's not a good way to establish a relationship. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the kind of thing where you, what do you want him to try to Bigfoot Munger? Come on, we like Munger.
See, this is why I'm in control.
That's exactly right.
How about chief accountant?
$195 so far. We'll go to the text line throughout the show to keep an eye on this, all right? Lise Klink will be on in a few minutes, and she'll tell us how to manage our money.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money!
Texter from 630 says $13.13. That brings us to a total of $208.13 plus the British pounds. What's that translate to in cash?
Still working on it. Turns out, maybe I'm not the best CFO at this moment. But
you're a careful CFO. You want to make sure your ciphering is right.
I have that app. Wait, how many pounds?
10 pounds.
10 pounds.
Okay, 10 pounds. Got it.
Yes, 10 pounds. And again, once all of this money is pledged, I will announce the total. And then in 6 months, I will hold a press conference explaining where the money is.
10 British pounds, around $14.44 today, right now.
Let's call that 1444. That takes us to 222.57 as we bring in Elise Klink. Elise, we have raised $222.57 for the state of Illinois. We will not be sending that money to the state. But a bill that can be paid off will be paid by the show for $222.57. How are we doing so far?
sounds about the way that the state pays its bills now.
Yeah, well, Leslie Munger is doing her best. I mean, the comptroller is doing her best to get this done with all this nonsense. But, you know, I think if you're a big enough of a jackass to submit a budget that's $7.5 billion underwater, I don't think we can trust you with another nickel.
I think we already knew that. But, you know, good to have the reconfirmation, right?
That's exactly right. So $222.50, that's where we are right now. All right, let's talk housing. Where are we in the housing market right now?
So the S&P Case-Shiller Index came out yesterday, and this watches kind of how it tries to normalize the rise and fall of home prices in about 20 cities across the country. And it rose kind of an astonishing 5.2% in March. So I looked at this and I thought, well, what's really going on? And what's going on is not that we have a bubble, although we do, I think, in a few places, but mostly we don't have anything to buy.
So the volume isn't there.
The
inventory isn't there.
No, before the bubble and even during 2008, but for the prior 10 years, we were reliably building about, let's say, 1 million new houses a year, new construction. And right now we're building about 600,000, which, you know, a 40% reduction would be a housing depression in anybody's book.
Sure.
And at the depths of it, we were building only, say, 300,000 homes back in 9, 10, 11, 12. So we've been building up slowly from there. But what is being built is kind of a problem. And that's because what's being built is really high-end homes that are customized, that people actually buy off the blueprints. What we're not seeing is any large-scale production first-time buyer homes or entry-level homes. And that's kind of problematic.
Why would the housing industry, the construction industry, not see this void and fill it?
Well, it's interesting. They do see it. So I was at SABU last week, the Society of American Business Editors and Writers in D.C., and I'm listening to some of the nation's top housing economists and people who are thinking about this stuff. And they're very, very worried because the way traditionally housing has been is you go to college, you get out of college, you rent an apartment with your friends, and you drink a lot of beer, and you date a lot of people. And then you move in from there, you buy like a start, you marry somebody or you partner up, and then you buy a starter home. And that's just not happening. So we saw last week that the numbers from the Census Bureau, the largest percentage of millennials under the age of 35 are living with their parents in history. So people haven't even moved out of their parents' houses yet into a house with a condo with friends that they're renting, which most people in the housing industry think is a first step to getting into a home that you buy. And so builders don't want to buy it because so many of them went out of the business in the housing crisis. So it's kind of this weird perpetuating circle.
So we're two steps behind. We got kids still on the couch who haven't moved out into their starter situation with roommates before they get the first house. We're two down.
Yeah, we're two down. And then here's a third problem, which is that because housing prices keep going up and up, and it's harder than ever, if you've got pristine credit like you do and lots of cash, you can buy a house tomorrow, but for anybody else who just doesn't look like that profile, it's a little bit harder. And so for first-time home buyers who typically don't have the best credit and don't have a whole lot of cash, they don't have anything to buy. But if they did have something to buy, they'd probably have a hard time buying it.
So is there, based on what's come up, this level of knowledge, is there an avenue for new construction companies to start, new companies to get going, or is that an unrealistic view because it'll take too long to get that cranked up?
Well, it takes almost 8 to 10 years for an overnight housing success, right?
Okay.
You've got to get financing. You've got to figure out where you're going to do it. You've got to acquire the land. That's a hard, long slog. And that's very expensive, too. Land prices have gone up dramatically. So there's a whole lot of things that are inhibiting the growth of these kind of first-time production buyers. And then, not to mention that, we're having trouble finding people who are qualified to build because in the housing crisis, they stopped building and all these people left the industry.
Yeah, they got out of the business.
Who's going to do the painting? Who's going to do the hammering and the sawing and the nailing? It's kind of problematic.
And I suppose if you're parents of soon-to-be adult children or college graduates who are living at home, which is a lot of people, probably the majority of people listening, then you're not likely to move into whatever your next stage of life house is, because you don't know if you're going to need the room for your kid or not. You're planning on not, but you can't do that because your kid's still at the house, so maybe you're not going to sell this year.
Yeah, so people just aren't moving. This is another really odd sort of thing. We saw household formation drop way under the million, million and a half level that's normal for the population level we have. That's pretty much every year you can count on a million new families forming, households forming. That hasn't been happening. People are staying at home. They're and you're right, parents just aren't moving, or whoever's got all these people. The other problem you've got is that aging relatives have now moved into the house as well. So the sandwich generation, which we've been watching, and I hate to say that you and I are now a part of, Steve.
Yes, we are. We're part of the sandwich.
It's, man, it's getting crushed in there.
We're getting squished in the middle. We're in a sandwich.
It's peanut butter and jelly for everybody.
Well, this is a serious issue. It's kind of an interest, sort of fascinating development, but fascinating and also crushing in a lot of ways, because if the economy is coming back, and it's not just a Wall Street economy, we certainly see jobs numbers going up. All this, of course, dependent on the election in the fall and what happens beyond that. But if the economy is truly coming back, not the Wall Street economy, the real people economy, there's a whiplash effect of that that's going to take some time as well. So housing, you know, there's a lot of houses that seem to be up for sale, but maybe that's just particular neighborhoods, and we may be in a serious world of hurt on this end in a year from now.
Well, let me leave you with this thought.
Yeah, if you got any good news, for crying out loud.
I don't, but since you brought up politics and it's your favorite subject, I thought I'd throw this out.
Top three, anyway.
So it's interesting. The housing economists say that 25%, a full quarter of the people who are doing the hammering, the nailing, and the sawing, are what they call non-Native Americans. So I asked the question.
Well, ain't that ironic?
Right? If you build a wall and you deport all the Mexicans,
right,
what's going to happen to the few people who are left building houses? And the answer was, we'd really rather not know.
You know, it's really unfortunate that you are somehow throwing out the idea that Mr. Trump hasn't thought about everything he says, that somehow he doesn't have a plan behind every word that falls out of his mouth.
You know, I'm not mentioning any presidential.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, that was
me. Saying that I was asking the question.
I'd like to build a wall around Trump. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Elise Glink. We're going to follow you on thinklink.com and all the associated ways we can follow you. But thanks for going to D.C. and figuring this out and only depressing us slightly.
You bet. Anytime.
All right. See ya. That's Elise Glink. Thinklink.com for everything related to Elise Glink. She's great.
She's fantastic.
Even when she's bringing us really terrible news.
I know. But she does it in such a nice way.
I want people to understand we have $222.57 raised so far that will not be given to the state of Illinois. The CFO of the state of Illinois, as appointed by me, Mike Jacobson, Jake will decide what bills need to be paid in conjunction with Leslie Munger. He's going to call her and go, hey, yo, Munger, just so you know, Steve gave me this money. I want to pay a bill. What do we got? And then we'll pay a bill for the state of Illinois as we chip away. But we're not going to give a dime of this money to the state of Illinois. You know why? Because why would you give the money to the people that don't know how to spend it, keep it, use it, invest it, or put it to use for the people of the state of Illinois? Mm-hmm. Why would you give them a nickel?
We're not going to.
No, we're not going to do it. We continue to take your pledges. However, we won't be able to spend the Three Stooges money that was just sent to me. Somebody copied their Three Stooges money and sent it to me. That's not legal tender, but I appreciate the entertainment value. It's 6:32 and the big story is next on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
6:44, Carrie Conti at K Conti Law. Covering the obvious story. I mean, on week to week, how many stories do we have about gorillas? It's gorilla law. And is it true you were in Cincinnati when all this started?
That is so weird, isn't it? I was, and it was quite the talk there, and that was a beloved animal in the town, and I still don't understand how people are saying that they should just let the kid stay in the you know, in the arena with the monkey, but that's what is being said, and it's just bizarre.
We have a very odd sense of perspective and priority in a lot of ways in this country. And the loving critters and loving the ability to save animals and respect animals is great. But I'm sorry, I'm really always going to value a four-year-old, regardless of what the circumstances are and how this happened, a four-year-old's life over the gorilla's life at that moment, and that's what the zoo did.
Well, and the zookeeper said that the gorilla, he watched the gorilla actually crush a coconut with his bare hand. So this is an animal that is extremely strong and extremely dangerous and agitated. There was just no question that that had to be done. No question at all.
So, and that's what all the animal experts are saying as well. But we will tackle the legal perspective in a second and also ask you about the Drew Peterson situation as well and see if he's killed anybody between court and going back to jail. You know, he's a versatile guy. Hold the line if you would. At K Conti Law. Jake, you are the CFO appointed by me of the state of Illinois. We're asking you to spend money raised by listeners. We're up to $243.57 with a $10 contribution from someone who said they'd take a break from Candy Crush to give us their $10.
That was nice.
Someone's also given us 30 pieces of silver. I don't know what the current valuation is on that, but we'll get that. Jake, we're really your assistants in this. So we're at $243.57. To raise money for the state of Illinois to pay the bills that the state won't pay. And before you poo-poo this, and before you say, oh, yeah, okay, whatever, $243. It's $243.57 more than the state had yesterday. They're $7.5 billion underwater. Thanks, Mike. Madigan. 30 pieces of silver. You got me a number?
Around $20 per piece.
All right, so 60 bucks. We are now at $303.57.
Not 600.
Are you subtracting the stamp, too, that we're going to need to use to send the money?
Well, expenses. You know what? I'll pay expenses.
Okay.
Do you get the biblical reference, though? 30 pieces of silver.
Oh, that
Judas
was?
Used to betray Jesus, yeah.
243, 37. I said 60 bucks. 600 bucks?
600, yeah. Around.
This is why I'm the assistant. $843.57. Nice job, listeners. Keep it coming. We will save the state of Illinois and then have a non-petulant press conference about the money. Karen Conti's here. It's our regular Gorilla Law Corner. Harambe, is that the name of the gorilla, Karen?
I think it is.
Harambe was killed when this four-year-old slid off a rock wall after getting inside the gorilla enclosure. It appeared the gorilla was trying to protect the child. We don't know what the gorilla was thinking. Come on. But every animal expert, including those you watch on TV, like Jack Hanna, said the zoo did exactly what it had to do. If you shoot a silverback with a tranquilizer, a male silverback in particular, it could possibly anger them and they could harm the child. It's terrible the gorilla died, but what had to happen, happened. So who's liable here, if anyone?
Well, certainly the family could sue the zoo saying, you know, you didn't protect my son and my son, you know, got through the barricade there and was tortured and was, you know, tormented. Certainly the family could do that.
And I hadn't even thought about that. So the irresponsible parents could end up suing the zoo.
Well, it happens all the time. Remember we had that tiger issue? I think it was out in San Francisco where the kids were taunting the tiger.
Yeah.
And they ended up, you know, being mauled. But, you know, what they do is they look at their standards on how much protection there should be in a zoo encasement. And so, you know, you look at those standards, and if those standards are below what the other zoos are using, they could be liable. Now, of course, the zoo could sue the family of the little boy saying, you caused us to have to shoot this animal because
right.
you were negligent in taking care of your child. That's a little bit of a stretch because children really can't be negligent. You know, a four-year-old, we really don't hold them responsible for their actions. And because this was a wild animal, there's a real high duty to keep kids safe and to protect them. So, you know, the bottom line is I hope there is no lawsuit because this is one of those things where it was just an unfortunate, bizarre accident and that I don't even know if it could have been prevented under any circumstances.
Is the idea of some sort of criminal penalty against the mother, is there anything that could come there?
Certainly there could be. You know, I mean, criminal endangerment and reckless child endangerment by not, you know, taking care of her child. But as we all know, you have a four-year-old and maybe you have a couple other kids that you're tending to and you look one way and all of a sudden your kid's somewhere else. So I don't know, unless we have specific facts of prior incidents or that she was doing something or consuming alcohol or drugs, I just don't think there's going to be such a charge.
All right, so as far as we know, the gorilla thing could go away, but in the litigious society we live in, that remains to be seen. Man, I can't imagine the parents filing a lawsuit at this point, but who knows? It's entirely possible. Yeah. All right, let's talk about Drew Peterson for a second. Gosh darn it, darn the luck. Turns out he tried to kill Glasgow.
Oh,
this guy cannot catch a break.
He just doesn't learn, does he? Doesn't learn. But, you know, it's not surprising because if you look at it, I mean, here, you know, if you go down to Menard, which is where he's was tried and where he's imprisoned, you know, it's a prison town. Everyone knows who everyone is. And here's a prisoner who has committed murder. He's been convicted of it. He's on trial for attempting to murder someone else. You know, you're in a prison town. You've got the prosecutor having this guy on tape saying all these stupid things to a known criminal. And, you know, it's not surprising that he got convicted.
I guess the thing that did surprise me, I guess the thing that did surprise me in all of it was simply that, you know, this was sort of a third party involvement. And I thought maybe that Peterson's lawyer could get around it in some form because, you know, it seemed like an extension. It seemed like Drew Peterson may have been just shooting his mouth off in jail.
Well, you know, that happens. And, you know, on the other hand, when you hear these people talk about killing someone, they've never used the words, hey, I would like you to kill the state's attorney. They don't talk like that. They talk in code words, even if they don't think they're being tape recorded. So it's really not uncommon to convict someone when you don't have those actual words. You know, and the other thing, too, is we have to always look at snitches. Are snitches believable? And usually they're not. Usually they're unsavory characters who are trying to get some sort of deal to get them out of jail free or get them out of jail sooner. But in this case, we had the tape recording. So, you know, it seems to me that that this one is going to stick. And if the other one doesn't stick, we'll at least have this conviction.
It's Karen Conti. How do we get a hold of you at your law firm?
312-332-7800. Or you can email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
And Sunday night, you're on with Noonan.
That's right.
All right, so listen then. Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome.
And Jim, bye, Karen. Jim Glasgow is going to be with us after the 7 o'clock news
right.
as well.
So in about 10 minutes from right now?
Yes.
Okay. And by the way, you look at Jim Glasgow, you go, is there a tougher-looking dude in Chicago? I don't think so.
No.
But, you know, he made the point yesterday, and we can ask him about it. He made the point yesterday. He goes, you know, an attorney needs to be able to go home at the end of the day, not worry about somebody putting a bullet in his head.
That's right.
He's doing his job. Boy, but Drew Peterson can't catch a break. 657, more in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I anticipated a quick verdict. I figured they were either with us or they weren't. And, you know, about an hour is what I thought.
Well, let's just put another nail in his coffin and now obviously hope he sees that he's never getting out of jail.
The prosecutor has a right to go home and sleep soundly and not worry about getting a bullet in his head after he's done his job.
Randolph County State's Attorney Jeremy Walker, Stacey Peterson's sister, Cassandra Kales, and James Glasgow there, the Will County State's Attorney. Mr. Glasgow joins us now. First off, congratulations to you and the office on a case well prosecuted.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that.
And have we heard the last of this guy, or does it just basically depend on whether or not he commits any more crimes while he's incarcerated?
Well, we're going to have a sentencing hearing on July 26th. And, of course, you know the Illinois Supreme Court has taken a petition for leave to appeal on the murder of Kathleen Savio. We're very confident that the Supreme Court will affirm that. They affirm 50 to 60% of the criminal cases they take. And we believe the issue that's going to be looked at is the statements that were basically the law of the case at the appellate level. And I think they want to make it clear that forfeiture by wrongdoing is now the law of Illinois.
Good morning, Jim. Any more charges pending against Drew Peterson at this point?
No, there aren't. Again, this case, I think, demonstrated, you know, for everyone with the tapes, you know, the psychotic, neurotic pride that drives this man.
Yeah, a narcissist on a level that's hard to even comprehend, I think, for doctors of that science. But you mentioned forfeiture by, what is that law again?
It's forfeiture by wrongdoing. You know, and the thing that people don't understand, there are 27 hearsay exceptions under Illinois law. And this is simply another one. And as Justice Scalia said, in the Giles case, it's a 400-year-old concept. The U.S. Supreme Court first mentioned it in 1878, and it's gradually been applied throughout the country. A dozen states had legislation involving forfeiture by wrongdoing before I wrote the legislation here. And in 2011, the Supreme Court adopted the federal rule to be the law in Illinois.
See, and it comes down to this. In a civilized society, the test of any of that can be tested in court. So the law is the law. The charges are filed, and the court case goes forward. And you can prove it or disprove it, right? I mean, so there's nobody can claim this is some law that was put up just to get Drew Peterson. It's just not true.
No, it's 400 years old. And what's so wonderful about this is his sinister behavior. He got away with it for years. And then the tide turned, and it just so happened that we became familiar with this concept, and it fit perfectly because he had threatened women and told them things that he thought would die with them. And the joke was on him because it didn't.
Did you ever think you would have to get on the witness stand, Jim, and testify in this case?
Well, I felt I probably would. It was part of the motive. And, it's really very interesting because I met Drew Peterson in the early 1980s, as I've met hundreds of policemen. So we were acquaintances only. But he made a comment in December of 2007 after I exhumed Kathleen Savio's body and had the case reclassified as a homicide. He told the Herald News, "I like Jim Glasgow. Jim Glasgow is a very honorable man. I think whatever Jim Glasgow does, it'll be what he thinks is true." Now, that's the ultimate car salesman con man. And I apologize, I shouldn't have said car salesman.
No, but we understand the analogy.
But you know what I'm saying. I mean, I think it sums him up. He's going to con you as long as he can, and then when you're not doing what he wants, then he attacks you.
Well, and I think that's how he ended up getting married four times, because his wives thought that because he played his hand the way he played it, they could be the one to change him. And at some point, he became the true Drew Peterson, which brings us to Stacy Peterson, still missing. And is that in your jurisdiction, or is that out of Will County?
No, that's our jurisdiction. And in the hearing in 2010, we had to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that he murdered Stacy Peterson in order to get her statements in. And so, again, obviously we have a burden beyond a reasonable doubt before we go to a criminal trial.
Yeah, and for the sake of the family, and Cassandra Kales in particular, I think, addressed this, the family wants him in jail. The family does. I don't want to speak for him because I don't. But the family doesn't seem to be pushing for yet another trial. But a lot of families do need that for closure and for the justice for Stacy Peterson.
Again, Steve, the longer someone is missing, the easier it is to convince a jury that they didn't just run away.
Right.
That they are deceased.
Do you think you'll ever find her, Jim? The body or
again,
her?
Andrea, that's one of those needle in a haystack things. I hope we do. And we're going to follow up every lead.
At any point, did you have the emotion that, maybe if I could just get 10 minutes alone with Drew Peterson, we could talk this out? And I think you know what I mean by talk this out.
Well, again.
Jim, so that's me. Maybe that's just me.
I'm not a violent person.
I am.
But when I do prosecute someone for murder, and I know, I'm convinced in my heart that they committed that murder, I look at them in the courtroom and realize that all these niceties we provide this person, if we caught them in the act of the murder, it would be an entirely different scenario. And Peterson mused on these tapes that he was joking with his lawyers that he wanted to know how much they would give him if he jumped up and bit my nose off in court.
He's a freak show, man. He's just a freak show.
Yeah. So
I respect your professionalism, because the fact of the matter is you got to do a job, and you've done it well, and you continue to do it well. But when it comes down to personal threats or threats of your family, boy, there's no more ultimate test of how professional you can be.
Well, again, if somebody was attacking one of my children, my wife, the gloves come off, I guess, at the ultimate level. But I've never been in that. Fortunately, never been faced with that. But again, we have to abide by the law, or the whole thing collapses.
Right.
And that's why this particular crime, where the person who convicts another person of murder, and then that person wants to murder the prosecutor.
Right.
I mean, that's the ultimate crime within the criminal justice system.
Jim, I think he thinks that he will someday see the light of day and get out of prison. That will never happen, will it? He's got 38 years for this, and then they'll probably serve the other concurrently or consecutively?
Yes. It'll be consecutive. And the thing is that he's delusional when he analyzes his case. He complains that I was able to get in evidence that pierced the attorney privilege, the marital privilege, and the clergy privilege. He doesn't say that the evidence wasn't real and probative and proved that he murdered Kathleen Savio. He's just mad that we were able to do it, and he thinks we violated some law, but we didn't. He has no understanding whatsoever of the concept of forfeiture by wrongdoing and why it's in place.
Yeah, and he's mad because he got caught. He's mad because he got caught because he thought he'd be able to get away with it forever, and that's all part of his sickness. Listen, again, I thank you for what you do and what your office does and your people do and your continued health in doing it. So thanks for coming on, Jim.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Andrea.
Bye-bye, Jim.
That's Will County State's Attorney Jim Glasgow.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I raised close to $6 million. It'll probably be over that amount when it's all said and done. But as of this moment, it's $5.6 million. And on behalf of the vets, the press should be ashamed of themselves. They are calling me and they are furious because I send people checks of a lot of money, and I'm going to give you the names right now, which is what you want. And instead of being like, thank you very much, Mr. Trump, or Trump did a good job, everyone say, who got it? Who got it? Who got it? And you make me look very bad. I have never received such bad publicity for doing such a good job.
726. I've long given up on the idea that I can convince somebody not to vote for Trump if you really, truly believe that guy is the answer. However, for the majority of Americans who still haven't made up their mind between these two terrible, terrible candidates, I just want you to hear his words. And I want you to imagine him as president. This is Donald Trump yesterday. And the backstory on this, in case you're not aware, is Donald Trump decided in January to skip a Fox debate. And in lieu of that Fox debate, held a separate event in Iowa where he raised money for veterans charities. At the end of the night, including a $1 million pledge from himself, he had told the world that he had raised $6 million. Sometime in mid to late March, the person in charge of it for his campaign, who is a state rep in New Hampshire, said, it's not a big priority for me to figure out where the money went or if we collected a dime. Going forward, Drew Peterson from CNN looked into it. You did a couple of pieces on it as well, mm-hmm. Andrea.
Yep.
And what we determined was that somewhere between the $1 million check from Trump, just issued in the last 3 weeks, and $2.5 million was actually raised, and how much of it was disseminated was not even findable.
No.
Corey Lewandowski, the Trump campaign manager, had a different answer than anybody else in the Trump campaign. And Trump refused to talk about it. So if you think it's unfair for the presidential candidate to hold a press event where he's trying to gain support for being a swell guy and then to take pledges and then not announce where those pledges have gone or even if any of those pledges turned into real money, well, then you and I are on different pages on this. Because if you're going to be president of the United States, making your promises stick should be what you're held accountable for. Every president ever has been held accountable for that. And Trump's reaction to the questioning yesterday, which was completely fair, is exactly why I'm concerned about him being the president. Because when you are criticized every single day, sometimes unfairly, in this case completely fairly, and you're criticized every single day, how will you handle it? Well, every time Donald Trump is criticized, he throws a tantrum like a 12-year-old. And the fact is, yesterday, during this press conference, he took the tantrum thing to a whole new level.
Completely.
So the press was doing its job, asking questions about something that Trump started and something Trump said. And factually, Time Magazine reports today, USA Today reports today, CNN, Fox, all report today. Trump did not, and the Trump organization did not write the checks to cover this until last week when the Washington Post did an article saying none of these people have been paid.
Right. Where's the money?
All those checks were dated the same day that the Washington Post article came out. In other words, they had no intent of paying it anytime soon until their feet were finally held to the fire. That's the background. So here's Donald Trump talking about it yesterday, and here's how he feels about the media.
Yeah, I think you've set a new bar today for being contentious with the press corps, kind of calling us losers to our faces and all that.
No, not all of you, just many of you.
All right, fine. Enough of us. Is this what...
Not you, David.
Is this what it's going to be like covering you if you're president?
Yeah, it is. Let me tell you,
we're going to have this kind of confrontation in the press room?
Okay, yeah, it is going to be like this, David. If the press writes false stories... like they did where I wanted to keep a low profile. I didn't want the credit for raising all this money for the vets. I wasn't looking for the credit. And by the way, more money is coming in. And the people know the stories are false. I'm going to continue to attack the press. Look, I find the press to be extremely dishonest. I find the political press to be unbelievably dishonest.
Again, this is the same guy who you heard at the top of this segment say he didn't want any credit. I don't want any credit. I don't want any credit. I don't want any credit at all for this. At the top of this segment, what'd you hear Trump say? He was mad because the press didn't say, hey, Trump did a good job.
Exactly.
Which is it, Donald?
He spent, do you know how long he spent calling out reporters yesterday or criticizing reporters? 30 minutes. He called them dishonest, not good people, sleazy, and among the worst human beings he's ever met. That's a direct quote.
We got sleazy coming up. Here's Trump on CNN's John Acosta yesterday. Roll.
Didn't want the credit for it, but it was very unfair that the press treated us so badly. Yeah, go ahead.
To follow up on that, you keep calling us the dishonest press, the disgusting press.
Well, generally speaking, that's 100% true. Go ahead.
I disagree with that, sir. And if I can ask you this question, it seems as though you're resistant to scrutiny, the kind of scrutiny that comes with running for president of the United States.
But you know what? When I raise money, excuse me, I've watched you on television. You're a real beauty.
That's one of the most respected reporters on the White House beat for years.
You're
a guy named John Acosta. Tom Lamas from ABC got the majority of Trump's wrath. Here's that.
I could have asked all these groups to come here, and they could have made. I didn't want to do that. I'm not looking for credit. But what I don't want is when I raise millions of dollars, have people say, like this sleazy guy right over here from ABC. He's a sleaze, in my book. You're a sleaze because you know the facts, and you know the facts well. Go ahead.
That's calling a reporter a sleaze. Now, take that to a White House press briefing a year from now. Take it to a press briefing that happens every day because Trump can't focus on actually doing the job because the moment he's criticized, he has to call people names. The other story that broke yesterday was Trump University, and in the Trump University playbook, it was pretty much what you'd expect it to be. Hardcore sales tactics to hit people up for as much money as possible to try to get them to sign up for what amounts to a pyramid scheme. You get more people involved, I'll get more people involved, I get paid if you get people involved. That sort of setup that Trump was minimally involved in, if not at all, even though in all of the sales manuals, there was direct instructions to say Trump would be a part of your training. And nobody got that.
No.
Trump on Trump University in a case he still thinks he can win.
I will win the Trump University case. I already am as far as I'm concerned. But I will win the
Why
Trump University
case. Why antagonize the judge
this
in that
is
case?
Because I don't care.
And
because you know what? Why antagonize? Because I don't care. I have a judge who's very, very unfair.
Why?
Well, you'll see it in court documents. But I have a judge who's very, very unfair. He knows he's unfair. The woman that was the original plaintiff in the case, they went to the court, and the judge allowed her to get out of the case. The case should have been dropped. Whole case should have been dropped. They wanted her dismissed from the case. You know why? Because she was deposed. She was such a bad witness that we win the case easily. She signed a letter, and she's on film. She's on tape, like these cameras, saying unbelievably good things about Trump University. So they didn't want her anymore because she's a disaster for them.
It's Donald Trump in a case that won't be fully prosecuted until after the election. Again, you got to decide who gets your vote. I just don't understand how that guy gets your vote.
Well, and the testimony, too, just real quick, from the managers, the former managers of Trump University called it unscrupulous. And they said it relied on high-pressure sales tactics.
And to bring it back to a veteran, there's a veteran who came out yesterday who fought for this country and served this country well, who Trump took for $25,000 in that Trump University scam. It's 7:33. A special big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Stunning failure by the supermajority Democrats who control our legislature. The Democrats in the General Assembly have failed to pass a balanced budget. They have failed to pass reforms to protect our property taxpayers. They have failed to pass reforms on our pension system. They have failed to pass reforms to grow our economy and create more high-paying jobs. They have failed to pass reforms on our political system through term limits. Stunning failure again.
7:44, the Senate Republican leader is Christine Redonio. Chris, good morning. Is it okay if I call you Chris? I never know what to say to you.
Oh, no, that's fine. Absolutely fine. I've been called worse.
I just want to be respectful while we try to get some answers here as much as that's possible. Listen, I just heard the governor's statement, and I heard it yesterday as well. I don't disagree with a word of it. It's a stunning failure. And I think the people of Illinois are finally waking up to how big a deal this is. Do you have that sense?
Yes, I do. And I hope they keep following it because it's really important to them.
The idea that Mike Madigan, with all of his power, and frankly, President Cullerton as well, couldn't come up with a temporary kick-the-can-down-the-road funding measure yesterday in the few hours before midnight is ridiculous. They threw a $7.5 billion over the number budget on the desks of all of you guys, and you said you got an hour and a half before we vote on it. So I don't know how Madigan looks in the mirror, because he looked at my face last night on TV and he lied to me.
Well, it is amazing that they are completely out of touch with reality and the fiscal situation of the state. I mean, not only do they put up a $7 billion out of balance budget, but they passed a school funding bill, at least in the Senate, that spends an extra $900 million with absolutely no mention of how that would be paid for. So, you know, and they admitted point blank, they can't do a single thing until after the election. So the Democrats in this state have said, we're just going to roll over and let the state continue to go into debt until we get past the election, because we can't do anything to make the constituencies that put us in office, mainly the public employee unions and the trial lawyers, unhappy.
Okay, what happens now? Now they're saying, okay, we don't have a budget, but we're going to do this temporary budget to keep us going through the end of the year. Basically,
well, we don't have that agreement.
Well, it's got to be some sort of a Band-Aid. We have to have spending.
We have to have something. You're right. Now, the one glimmer of hope last night was the fact that the Senate Democrats stood up to Mike Madigan, and they voted down in pretty stunning fashion his $7 billion out-of-balance budget. So I guess that's a good sign that maybe we're breaking the logjam at the top there. But you're right. If we don't get some kind of spending plan in place, the universities will close. We cannot feed prisoners or operate prisons. And very importantly, schools cannot open in the fall.
This is the absolute minimal standard that we hold you guys to, that you go to Springfield and you pass a budget and you get to work. And this is the number one thing on the table that we're talking about. And the last, I think I'm right about this. The last number I heard is $13 million is being thrown away every single day just in interest. And it may be
exactly.
Higher than that.
So come November, when the Democrats are finally ready to get real about something, the bill that we have to pay off is going to be $13 million higher every single day this is put off.
And
it's just a stunning lack of responsibility.
And to admit publicly or quietly, where it's agreed upon by everybody in Springfield, who even has a remote sense of what the truth is, that this is all about staying in power and staying in elected office, they don't care. Because
they don't care.
They don't care. They don't care that social services are being shut down in record numbers. They don't care that special needs kids are not getting services. They don't care that we can't pay for roads and bridges, including bridges that, you know, may collapse at some point. Because if you think the state doesn't have any responsibility in that, you're out of your mind. And they don't care that universities are going to close and the parents don't know how they're going to send their kids to school or where their kids are going to be able to go to school. They don't care.
But they will be back in office. Because it's all about politics. It is so wrong on so many levels, and the good news is I think people are waking up to it a little bit, because the key to changing this lies in the ballot box.
I mean,
those folks that enable the Democrats year after year, and, you know, they come back to their districts and they say, well, we're so fiscally responsible, but then they go down and support this kind of circus. It's wrong.
Chris, we've known you many years, and when you meet behind closed doors, when the four legislative leaders or top Republicans and top Democrats meet with Mike Madigan, what is his reaction to all of this? I'm just curious.
You're assuming that they meet with Mike Madigan.
Well, yeah, at some point.
Well,
I mean, you guys have to speak and talk and say, hey, let's try and compromise.
Are you ever granted a one-on-one?
Human to human.
Yeah, he doesn't say anything. That's the interesting thing. He's got a curious little smile, raises one eyebrow, says as little as possible, and then goes out and spins the message the way he wants. But he participates very little in the conversation.
That is, of course, the same guy who won't talk to the media unless it's in some sort of group setting, a group press conference. He'll only answer the questions he wants to answer. He literally ran away from Chuck Gowdy as opposed to answering questions a couple of years ago. He has a blanket offer on this. Is the number one talk show in the city. And I'm telling you right now, same thing I said last hour, I'll cancel any guest on no notice the minute he's ready to come on here and answer any questions. Because, Chris, the idea that you put up a $7.5 billion budget, $7.5 billion out of whack budget, and you don't have to answer to the voting public is why that even makes sense. I'm not sure there's not something wrong with the guy.
The voters keep putting him back in office, and then his caucus, the rank-and-file Democrats, continue to elect him leader.
But you seem to be saying that that you have at least a sense that there may be a break in that in some ways, because just out of basic self-preservation, maybe the Democrats are realizing this is not the guy we can be behind anymore.
Exactly. And I think you saw that last night when the Senate voted down the budget that he proposed. That, however, doesn't get us past the problem that we talked about earlier, and that is we still need to pass a minimal spending plan and a standalone school bill so that people know what will happen in the fall.
So will you stay in session now? What happens now, right, today, this week, next week?
I suspect that we will be in at a minimum next week. We will regroup. The leaders will regroup to begin to talk about that stopgap budget. And again, it's so unfortunate because we won't be talking about any of the reforms that got Illinois in the bad place we're in. We'll just be kicking the can down the road. But we have to do the minimum of keeping the state running and opening schools. So we will talk about that next week.
Is it any wonder businesses are leaving this state? Is there any wonder that people are leaving the state? Families are moving out. Businesses are moving out. The house is on fire. And Mike Madigan's got a bucket of water, and he won't throw it on the fire.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just incredible to watch.
It's just outrageous. And, we appreciate the access. Thank you for coming on and talking about it and answering the questions. And we'll continue to try to figure out some answer before we bring the burning clubs to Springfield.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. You shouldn't tell her how much we raised.
She thought we were kidding.
Yeah, no.
The busload of people with the burning clubs. Let me tell you something, Springfield. You better have the moat ready.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:13 now. We're raising money, Dean, to pay the bills of the state of Illinois.
Need? How much do you need?
Well, Jake, we haven't had an updated total in an hour. And I know some people wanted to chime in on Trump and clogged up the fax machine with Trump text. the fax machine.
I was going to say.
The texters, the text line. Wait, how old am I?
Wait a second. I'll get the mimeograph machine out.
Remember how those smelled back in the day?
Got me through high school.
But anyway, what do we have, Jake?
And you said you were going to pick up the stamp and all the expenses.
Yes, okay. I'll pick up the forever stamp.
So minus the 41, we're at around $824.
$824. All right. So again, we'll call Leslie Munger, and we'll see what bill needs to be paid for $824, and we will pay it. We're not giving the money to Springfield. We'll pay it. Right. All right, Dean. So the effort continued at $824. The state's conservatively with the pension debt. We need about $150 billion. But you know what you call 824? Better than they're doing in Springfield, buddy. That's what you call it.
A lot more progress than they've gotten done down there.
Coming up, Mary Poppins sequel. I love the casting for this. Dean will have news on that.
You are going to make a fantastic Bert the Chimney Sweep.
Don't you think? I mean, honestly, it's about time.
Chimney.
Well, don't give away the song. Oh, Tony Award-winning musical coming to Chicago. Snoop Dogg is boycotting Roots. The reason I'm laughing is because any headline with Snoop Dogg just tickles
me. The reason that he's boycotting Roots is, I get it, I understand it, but if you think about some of the things that he's done, it's hilarious.
The reasons we love Gina Rodriguez, the list gets longer. And the Hunger Games has an actress that may have given out the greatest baby name ever. You know, let's not make people wait for that. Who are we talking about?
We are talking about the actress who played the character. Jenna Malone is the actress's name. She played Joanna in the Hunger Games. And her bouncing baby boy's name is Ode Mountain.
Is that the first name or the first and
That's
middle
the
name?
That's the first and middle name.
Got it.
O-D-E is the first name. Ode Mountain is the middle name.
Is there an explanation? Is that where she conceived him? What do we know?
Don't know anything about that except that it's nuts. full name, Ode Mountain DiLorenzo Malone.
Who's the father?
I do not know that either.
Ode Mountain Senior.
I am too mesmerized on this name to care about any of the important details on that. But
remember back in the day when we thought Apple was weird?
Apple is weird.
Maybe this is like a perfume, Ode de Mountain.
Oh, that's very...
Maybe that's what it's supposed
Ode
to be.
Ode Mountain.
Ode de Mountain.
Where the scent of the wilderness. It's Ode Mountain.
Very possible.
Jenna Malone and Ethan DiLorenzo. I'm not sure who Ethan DiLorenzo is, but he looks like a member of the Manson family.
That's her. That is her partner.
So it's Ode Mountain DiLorenzo?
Ode. Don't make it. Don't make it sexier than it is.
Yeah.
Ode Mountain.
Don't make fun of it either.
Why?
He looks like Kurt Cobain, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, it's a black and white photo. I literally, when I saw this, you know, on the monitor this morning, I thought it was some photo from the '60s. I thought it was something Larry was goofing on.
Right. You're right. Yeah, that's the Instagram picture, but this...
Well, God bless him. God bless him.
Ethan DiLorenzo. I'm just trying to see if there's any... No, not really any explanation.
No. Ode Mountain. Yep. There's got to be some mountain in America named Ode Mountain. They were up there in a car. One thing led to another. Next thing you know, she's pregnant.
That's nice.
I really didn't make it sound sweet, did I?
That's nice. When you can name your child something that guarantees that they're going to pretty much spend every week of their lives in school getting their butts kicked by somebody.
Well, but think about this. If we all knew where we were conceived, or if you know where you conceived your children, what would their names be if you named them after that geographical location?
All right. TMI. I don't even want to know. So,
what's the baby's name?
Okay, A&P.
Jewel.
What's the baby's name? Best Western Quad Cities.
Okay, paper towel aisle at the Jewel.
8:17. Let's get you traffic with Mary, and then Dean will come back and explain show business to us. Because somebody has to.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard.
You know, this geographic naming of the baby thing, if that works out, Dean, that explains why. I had an uncle named Studebaker. Yeah.
You know, Ronnie Howard, Opie, Rich Cunningham, now famous director, Oscar-winning director, he named all of his children where they were conceived.
Well, Opie's not perfect. You know, Opie makes mistakes, too. So, what are the kids' names? I don't even know.
There is a Dakota.
Is Bryce Dallas Howard? Is that one?
Oh, Dallas. There you go.
Is it Dallas? Or yeah. Is Bryce a place?
I may be mistaken with Dakota. I thought there was a Dakota. But, yeah, his kids are all geographic.
Andrea will look up Ron Howard's children's names here while we talk.
Yes.
All right, so in the news today, sports fans, Mary Poppins sequel, who is in the cast?
Emily Blunt.
Yeah, I love her.
She is fantastic.
She's the best.
She's going to take over the Julie Andrews role as Mary Poppins. She's a fantastic singer, as she showed off.
Chim chiminy, chim chiminy, chim chim chiru. That was Emily Blunt. She's rehearsing here.
She is. She's going to polish it up a little bit between now and then.
Well, it's early. She has time.
She was in that movie that was out a couple of years ago, the musical, Disney musical, Into the Woods. So she's fantastic. And can you get the hottest guy on Broadway also to be in the show?
Wolf Blitzer?
It is an Emmy winner, a Grammy winner, Tony Pulitzer Prize winner.
Wolf Blitzer?
The man who created and stars in Hamilton that's on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Wolf Blitzer. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
There you go.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
He's rehearsing here, too. Chim chimini, chim chimaroo. Apparently, they're doing a duet.
So he's going to be a brand new character. This isn't a remake of Mary
Poppins.
Oh, it's not. This is a sequel of Mary Poppins.
Okay.
Now, Miranda will play a new character who is a street lamp lighter, not a chimney sweep. His name will be Jack. Film will be set in Depression-era London and will follow the little kids that were in the first movie, Jane and Michael. Now they're all grown up. They've got their own children. Mary returns to help them raise their own children. So it'll be called Mary Poppins Returns. Everybody clear your calendar. Christmas Day 2018, we're all going to go together and sing.
Chim, 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 chim.
A chance for the hat trick on that.
Hey, I really dropped the ball on it. Let's go live to Andrea now from Ron Howard's house. What are the kids' names?
All right. Well, there's twins, Paige and Jocelyn. Their middle names, Carlisle. Paige Carlisle and Jocelyn Carlisle.
Well, they were both conceived in the same place because they're twins.
Well, Carlisle.
Where would Carlisle
hotel
be?
Maybe that's at the Carlisle.
At the hotel. It's a famous hotel.
Bryce Dallas.
Dallas, yep.
Yeah, and then this is confusing. Reed Cross. Cross is his middle name, so.
Conceived in a field of reeds
or a church.
At a Red Cross. I thought they were doing it in a church.
Cross, Reed Cross.
Maybe the Holy Land.
Cross is a specific road, according to Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh, there you go.
And I'm not reading this. This is right off the top of my head, by the way.
Okay.
Crossroad. So they did it in the car?
Hello.
That's a 70s throwback, I think.
Richie Cunningham.
Wild man.
I found my thrill.
Chim chimini.
I'm surprised one of the kids not named Blueberry Hill.
Tony Award-winning musical coming to town. What is it?
It is Kinky Boots that started here in Chicago, premiered here in 2012, went to Broadway, won 6 Tony Awards, and is going to be coming back for 1 week only, last week of August, early September. Single tickets have not gone on sale just yet for that.
Gina Rodriguez story?
This is a very nice story. A high school teenager admired Gina Rodriguez's dress that she wore to the 2015 Golden Globe so much. She wrote a letter, said, "What the heck? I'm going to give it a shot." Writes a letter to Gina Rodriguez and says, "I love your dress so much. Is it possible that I could borrow it for my high school prom?" The dress was already gone. You know, the stars don't often own the wardrobe that they wear at the award shows. But Gina Rodriguez did own the dress that she wore at the 2014 Golden Globe Awards. Sends it to the high school teenager, pays for the alterations, makes it a high school prom that she will never forget. That is our Chicago's very own Gina Rodriguez, the kind of wonderful person that she is.
And finally tonight, Snoop Dogg is in the news.
Snoop Dogg is very upset with this new miniseries that started running on Memorial Day.
Right.
Roots. It's a remake of the old 1977 miniseries that was historic in so many ways, winning every award, breaking ratings records. It's the basically the same telling of the story of Kunta Kinte and his lineage that goes back to Africa, where he's captured as a slave, brought to America, became Toby. If, you know, for those of you that remember the whole story, it's groundbreaking. And I saw a little bit of the remake last night, and it also is pretty good. It's not eight nights like the original. I think it's three nights for this new one, and is also doing pretty well in the ratings. But Snoop Dogg is upset about the whole thing. Went on an expletive filled rant on social media yesterday, telling people to boycott it. He doesn't like that the story is being told. He says that the story of black people are only being told through slave stories. And he said that it's very offensive, that there should be more positive images, that the TV and the movies only show abuse and black people in demeaning roles. He wishes that there were more positive projects.
Well, that's
projects.
Fine, but it's roots.
It's the story of
slavery.
I guess his point is that, you know, when there are major stories to be told about black people, that they are always, you know, either the help, like in the movie The Help, or 12 Years a Slave, or Roots. That he's saying that there must be more positive stories.
Well, he's got plenty of money, then produce one.
That said, from the man who played Huggy Bear in the Starsky and Hutch remake, is that the kind of positive image that he's talking about, or
the pimp,
the pilot in the movie Soul Plane, who was smoking dope the whole time that he was flying the plane? Is that the kind of positive role, Snoop, that you're talking about? But I get his point. I've talked to countless actors, directors, producers about the very same thing, and what almost to a T that they will all tell you is that they're happy that there are roles that are being told, that it would be nice if there were some other projects, but they're happy that the story of what happened to Africans during that time, brought to America by force, they're glad that those stories are being told.
So. Yeah, and Roots, one of the most powerful things you've ever seen on your television or in theater or anywhere. So I'm hoping this remake is good, and I hope the next generation can talk about it.
Snoop. I was watching a little of the original Roots.
S-N-O-O-P.
You know, and I remember
B-O-G-G.
It being...
B-O-G-G.
So, for shizzle, Steve, for shizzle. I was watching... some clips of it, and I remember it being so powerful and being so moved, and I'm watching it. I did not remember that the music that they used in the background is like Beretta-style disco music. You see,
I don't remember that either.
You see Kunta Kinte running through, you know, running away from the people.
So it's like a bad soundtrack?
Like, baka, baka, bow, bow, waka, waka, waka.
Really?
Baka, 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 yeah.
How distracting is that?
It's so weird to watch it now, but that was the music of the time, right?
All right, I gotta go back and look at that. Thank you, Dean Richards.
You're very welcome, Chim Chimney.
How much are you good for saving Illinois?
$14.89.
Add it to the total, $14.89 from Big Shot Dean Richards, multiple award winner and swell guy. Back with your big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
.842 now. Frank DeFord standing by. I love Frank DeFord. Dave, you would, I think, agree with me. Has there ever been a better writer than Frank DeFord? And then he takes up broadcasting in his career, and he's great at that, too.
Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book that was turned into a tremendous movie.
He also has done a tremendous amount of charitable work on behalf of his own child and a very moving piece on real sports in the last couple of years with he and Boomer Esiason, who's been dealing with the same situation in his own family. But his new book is called I'd Know That Voice Anywhere. My favorite NPR commentaries. Frank DeFord joins us after writing 1,600 of them since 1980. Frank, good morning. How are you?
Thank you for that nice introduction, Steve. I'm better after hearing that.
Well, you know, I've been a fan forever. You know that. And every time we get to talk, it's a better day for me. Let me just read to you. You know how you like when I read to you. This is from 2012. Again, the book is I'd Know That Voice Anywhere. I'd Know That Voice Anywhere. And get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one. Best of all, vis-a-vis the United States, The Summer Olympics always come in an election year, and it gives us 2 weeks off from the eternal campaign. Just think, if it wasn't for the Olympics, you'd now be hearing all about Rob Portman or Tim Pawlenty. And you know what I love about those two sentences, Frank? You could substitute any two politicians in those two sentences, and they still work.
That's for sure. That's the one thing we can be grateful for the Olympics, that they do come in that every that quartet year and get us a little bit away from politics, and Lord knows I wish they'd hurry up and come.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe stick around a little longer this year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should have 6 week Olympics this year. Because talking about the Olympics, though, you wonder how well they're going to come off down there in Rio with all the problems that they're having.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You got a political upheaval, an impeachment. You got major economic problems, security issues, and most importantly, the Zika virus and danger to athletes.
And not only that, there's the health problems with the water.
Yeah.
I mean, people say it's dangerous to swim in it or even to, you know, to row in it if you get the water splashed on you. We always sort of, before the Olympics come along, everybody says, I wonder whether they'll get it done, blah, 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 blah. And then it comes off beautifully. But this year you wonder whether it's just possible, because I think if the people start rioting on top of everything else, Lord knows what will happen to the games.
No question about it. I mean, so much of South America is a mess right now. But the water thing makes you long for the rust-colored water of Sochi.
Yeah.
Well, Sochi was great because it was sort of a tropical paradise where they held the
right.
Winter Games, and
right.
They had to bring in. So nobody wants to hold the Olympics anymore. I think Chicago's very lucky that you didn't get them when you bid for them. I mean, it's the sort of thing that upsets the city. It costs so much money.
Right.
You end up with which most people don't know what a velodrome is.
right.
And you say, well, we've got a velodrome. We just don't ever use it, but we've got a velodrome.
Can you see the aldermen in city council fighting over who gets the velodrome?
My people on the north side want it. No, my people on the
exactly.
south side. Oh, yeah. I mean, so I remember New York was also bidding for them, and I was just praying. I think the people of Boston were pretty smart. They said, no, thank you. You can have it.
It's not what it was. It certainly is not what it was, and certainly the scandal of all major world sports organizations doesn't help, from FIFA to the IOC and beyond. Speaking of Chicago, though, this is our city, of course, and I know how much you love Chicago. And there's an essay from 1996. Listen to this paragraph. This is why DeFord is so great. I think Chicago is the one town that best stands for the United States. Calls itself the second city, but really New York's more of a world thing than just the country. And Los Angeles is only marginally a city, just people in cars and images all living uneasily together in motion. Chicago is us. I mean, nobody writes like that. Frank, you're the best.
Well, I'm a great fan of Chicago, even though I'm an East Coast guy sitting in New York right now. But I've always loved Chicago, and I have the fondest memories of it. Bill Veeck comes first to mind. But I can remember my first trip to I sound like a little boy. I can remember my first trip to Wrigley Field.
Sure.
Batteries are the guy with the megaphone. I would say Pat.
Piper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Chicago is just very, very special. And I know parts of the city right now are going through hell, but I'm rooting for it.
Appreciate that.
I'm rooting for the Cubs.
Well, I tell you what, they may not even need us to root for them. Dave Ennett, say hi to Frank.
Frank, good morning. We're fortunate in Chicago to have some very good sports columnists.
Yes.
But you've written about the, I don't want to use the term demise, but the loss of that one voice in so many major newspapers around the country, where that role has been diminished somehow. What's happened to great sports writing in this country, and how the I guess the demise of so many newspapers has affected it?
I think part of what's happening, well, we all know newspapers are struggling, but beyond that, there are so many games now, so many numbers that we have to deal with, that there just doesn't seem to be the kind of space to carve out for the great columnists that go back, as a matter of fact, to Ring Lardner more than 100 years ago, right there in Chicago. And really, that's where the sports column was born. And it's just been ignored. And it's a great loss, because now all you see are statistics. And, you know, it becomes numbing after a while. And sports is a great thing to write about. It's wins and losses.
But you know what? It's not just the games, my friend. It's who has the pen, or who has the typewriter, or who has the keyboard. Now, we're going to lose you in about 30 seconds, because I know you got to jump to another interview. Andrea, say hi to Frank.
Frank, loved your article. I know it's about 10 years old, but the boys will be boys. And I say the boys will be boys, because that's what you call it, about Title IX. I loved it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I tried to be as eclectic as possible in this book and give you some serious stuff and give you some light stuff and some laughs. It's an easy book to pick up and put down.
It's called I Know That Voice Anywhere. And, Dave, you and I both share a love for real sports, the Gumbel Show, with the best sports correspondents ever put together, as far as I'm concerned. Frank, good health and stay at it.
Thank you, guys. Best to the Cubbies.
All the best. Thanks, bud. Thank you. I want to congratulate the Illinois Patriot Education Fund and thank our friend Mark Slaby and his wife Dana and their beautiful kids and all of the phenomenal volunteers who were out there yesterday. Day after Memorial Day, we do it every year. And we were at Medina. We got rained out after 8 holes, but everybody had a blast. Wasn't a complaint from anybody. Just goes to show you how moved everyone was by a record fundraising day where all the money raised by the Illinois Patriot Education Fund stays in the state to provide educational incentives and funding for family members of those killed or wounded in action or those who serve in various ways. And it's a bit of sweat equity. The full freight isn't paid, but it is paid to make sure that you can achieve your goals in life. And it's an ongoing scholarship. It's not a one-time hit.
By the way, that was kudos to you and everybody else, the auctioneer yesterday who raised all that money.
Yeah, you know.
Well, you want to say no to him during a live auction?
Let me think about it. I don't know if we mentioned his name or not. The reason is, here's why.
Yeah.
Because the people who are there, because they're America's finest, they're not going, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Mm-mm.
For instance, one of the people in the crowd was the man we believe shot and killed Bin Laden.
Right.
Okay, to shake his hand is something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another one, the auctioneer you mentioned, who was great, record number for the auction, is the man who pulled Saddam Hussein out of the rat hole and got to say to him, President George W. Bush sends his regards, and then put him in cuffs and take him away.
Yeah.
These are amazing, amazing people. There was probably, a dozen wounded warriors that were there who'd given arms and legs and we're some of the most entertaining people in the room by far. General Borling was there again. Look, it's a great crowd. So if you get a chance to support the Illinois Patriot Education Fund, I hope you'll do it. And, you know, you juxtapose that against the mess in Illinois. You got politicians in Springfield who are failing at their job massively. Mm-hmm. And you got America's finest in that room yesterday who are achieving 10 times what they should be asked to do.
That's unbelievable.
708 texture says, yep, state of Illinois owes me money. I live in Illinois, work in Illinois. I had my children enrolled in Illinois public schools and college. Yet my husband worked in Indiana and had an apartment in Indianapolis. So Illinois decided I didn't need to get all my tax money back from the state. Our accountant sent a letter 2 months ago. Nothing. Not a word yet. 608 texter, great idea. Collect money for Illinois bills and pick a particular caregiver that's owed money and pay them. Interview them. Maybe do one a day. Show the legislature that the Steve Cochran Show could do the job they refused to do. So, yeah, we got to keep rolling with this. We keep rolling with this. This started as a way to mock Trump and Springfield, but I think we got to. I think we got to keep rolling with this.
And I like your idea of we're going to give the money to. We're just going to pay it. We're not going to give it to Springfield.
No,
go through that system. No, the red tape.
You should see Springfield's handling charge. It's unbelievable. $7.5 billion over the number on a balanced budget. And we're going to give them a dime? I don't think so.
This is like a grassroots organization that we've started.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We are definitely grassroots. We're as grassroots as it gets. Gilda's Club does amazing work every day. In 10 minutes, we'll get some word from them on something cool we want you to know about because the station's a partner in it. Young man named Kevin Powell, who's being pimped out by the Ro Khan Show, former producer of this program and our baseball expert, we'll be on to talk Cubs and White Sox. And David Hochberg's in. Hochberg comes by about once a month to yell at us. He'll be in at 9:40.
He was at the outing yesterday as well.
He's an incredibly generous guy. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to the red, white, and blue. Nobody more patriotic than Hochberg. It's 8:59. We'll come back, get you news next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Deep breath by the lefty. Hayward swings and misses, and the ball game comes to an end. So the Cubs lose a Jake Arrieta start for the first time in his last 24 assignments.
Play this game long enough, you're going to lose a game here and there. That's just kind of part of it, but it was a good streak, and we'll get started on something else.
Times like this, in times of trouble, we need to turn to someone who can provide some comfort. That would, of course, be Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell, were you at the game last night?
I was at the game, Steve. I was.
What happened? Where was the Cubs' vaunted late-game offense?
Well, the offense wasn't there. Scott Kazmir, out of nowhere, pitches a one-hitter through six innings. And the
Will this be legendary MLB journeyman Scott Kazmir?
It would be, who sort of revitalized his career over the past couple seasons and sort of unexpected. But I guess this is what we love about baseball on both sides of town. You have the Cubs, who haven't lost a Jake Arrieta start since last July. That happens last night. The White Sox are in the middle of a 16-inning scoreless inning streak. They're facing one of the hottest pitchers in baseball, and they somehow manage to get three runs off of him and beat the Mets on the road. Now they have a chance to win a series. So this is what we love about baseball. Two unexpected turns last night on both sides of town, really.
Let me bring in your boss on this, Dave Ennett, who, by the way, his birthday was Monday, and you didn't get him anything.
No, that's okay.
Didn't I teach you anything about sucking up when you work for me?
Even though I've given him a Hooters card every year on his birthday.
Yeah.
I don't think I received that this year, by the way.
Are you coming in next week for Dave's late birthday party?
It's a surprise.
Yeah, no, it's a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Is that trend not continued on the Steve Cochran Show, celebrating a week late?
Yeah, so we'll do a party for Dave next week. It'll be a total surprise.
Yeah, I'll send you a happy birthday on Monday.
What do you mean send? Get your butt out of bed and come in?
Send. Okay.
No, it's too late for that, Kev. All right, true confessions here. Last week, Kev and I had a meeting. Kev had written a piece. Powell at the Park is his blog.
Yeah, it's good.
You can see it at WGNradio.com.
It's really good.
He wrote a piece which the headline was, The White Sox Are a Mess. Uh-huh. And I said, Kev, I'm not sure I'd go with that headline because they are, after all, still in first place. This was at the time we had the conversation. It turns out that Kevin was not only right, he was just a little bit early with it.
Don't you want him to be early as one of your reporters?
I do. And so I'm here to say that he was ahead of the curve on this one. So
he got it right and he got it early.
Yeah, my apology for questioning that your editorial judgment there. I think you turned out to be prescient.
My point, Kev,
it means that you knew it ahead of time.
Yeah, I
guess. He knew it before you said that, Steve.
Fear of the burn.
The point of that blog was that the White Sox still have a lot of holes to fill. Mm-hmm. I mean, they need a couple starting pitchers. They need bullpen help. They could probably use an extra bat. So that's an issue. And when you need to trade for those pieces, and you don't have any pieces to trade, I mean, they don't have a very deep farm system. So that was the point I was getting. They really only have two highly touted prospects in Carson Falmer, Tim Anderson. I don't know if the White Sox are going to be willing to trade one of those two. So it's how do the White Sox acquire these pieces That was the main point of the blog. So
we have to defend it. Dave's telling you you're right.
No, I said I agreed.
Well, I'm not defending it. Yeah, I'm just giving it a little summary.
Hold on a second. Let me put you on hold. You know, have you noticed how thin-skinned Kevin is now that he's talented?
I know, really. He's got to learn to take some criticism.
I mean, we're just complimenting him, and then suddenly he turns into Trump. It's unbelievable.
He's not on hold.
I'm not rich. What?
He's not on hold.
I got to push the button?
You've got to push the button.
All right, so the Cubs, nothing to worry about, obviously, though it's disappointing that Arrieta finally lost his start. But it had to happen at some point.
Yeah, it had to happen. I mean, he even said that last night. Joe Maddon said that last night. I don't think there's much to worry about if you look at what he did in May. 4-0 record, 2.08 ERA in his six starts. He's gone 20-0 over his last 24 starts dating to last season. So I don't think there's much to worry about. You know, a couple of hitters are slumping here and there. But for the most part, I think the Cubs are okay. Jed Hoyer, their general manager, also says they're probably going to be in the market for some pitching, whether it be a back end of the rotation guy or just somebody for the bullpen. You can never have enough starting pitching or bullpen help. So for the Cubs, I think they're fine. I don't think there's much to worry about there. Probably just add an arm or two at the deadline, and they should be okay. But the White Sox have a couple more holes to fill.
Andre has been out to a couple of Cub games this year. Is there anything new at the park you want to highlight, Andre?
That I want to highlight? No.
Okay. Well,
no, I think the park looks really good. And I was one of the – I mean, I told Kevin when they were building the new bleachers last year and adding all the signage and everything, I was worried about it. I think it looks really good.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, they do some cool things with the video board. Yesterday hosting the Dodgers, they had a replay of Vin Scully doing the seventh inning stretch. That was sort of a nod to him as he's in his final season. So they do stuff with the big video board in left field. Sometimes they just do video tributes instead of actually having somebody live in the stadium to do the seventh inning stretch. So,
and you guys remember before they had the screen, he used to have a court artist come out and do an artist rendering of the person if they were there.
A sketch with spray paint. Yeah. You know what's cool, though? They've kind of taken a little page out of the Blackhawks. You know, I think one of the best things at a Hawks game is the introduction and the dim the lights. Mm-hmm. They don't dim the lights, really, but like Kev said, they play, you know, montages from 89 and 2005, 2008. Yeah, it looks really cool.
Speaking of the Hawks, yesterday, you know what we didn't mention in regards to the Mark Slaby outing? Mark Slaby says hi to you too, Kevin.
Okay, I miss Mark. Tell him I said hi.
Yeah, thanks for coming out yesterday. The Mark Slaby outing, was it Jim Cornelison was out singing the anthem.
And God Bless America.
How about the day after Memorial Day in a room filled with heroes, Cornelison singing the anthem? Huh? Goosebumps?
So cool.
Anyone?
So cool.
Where were you yesterday around 1 o'clock?
I was at the radio station, WGN Radio.
Hmm. Yeah.
All right, we're going to ask him about it?
Yeah. Before you go, what's going on? Because we want you everybody to listen to the Roe and Anna DeVonta situation this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And then you apparently are being pimped out by Roe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've somehow been suckered into this dating game bit, and there will be two females coming in studio today.
Chosen by Roe.
The dating game. I'm sorry?
Chosen by Roe, the women?
Correct. Yes, they. This was discussed last week, and women were texting in as Roe solicited for him, and they were sending it photos and whatnot. And Roe and the producers were able to track some of them down, and they're willing to come in the studio.
How many mothers offered up their daughters?
Yeah,
about half the entries were from moms offering up their daughters.
And then
as the daughters found out that their moms had offered them up for a dating game on the radio, most of them backed out. So we have two in this week.
You know what's interesting to me, and I don't think it has anything to do with you, Kev, but who can be sure? The dating game always had three contestants.
Well, it's going to be, I guess, three rounds of two, so six total.
In other words, Roe couldn't pull three women, he only could pull two.
Does it bother any of you guys that these women might be, you know, exploited or anything of that?
No, they're volunteering. Mm-hmm. They're volunteering to be exploited.
Yeah, they're not being coerced.
First off, let's be clear. Yes, they will be exploited. And secondarily, they're volunteering to be exploited.
So is Roe going to pay for the date, Kev? Because you want to take him somewhere high end.
Well, I believe it's going to end up at Little Bucharest, Violetta's parents' restaurant.
Come on, Ro. Write a check.
On the real dating game, they'd send him, like, to Vegas for a weekend.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
No? No,
that's not happening.
Or go to RPM. You can go for some of those meatballs, Kevin.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't eat meatballs.
Yeah, those are great meatballs.
After Violetta's father throws you out of the family restaurant, you can actually go to RPM and drop my name and get a meal.
Sounds good. So we'll see how it goes. I think that's at 4 o'clock today.
4 o'clock today, Rokon, Anna DeVontis, and Kevin, their paying customer, because clearly Rose the pimp.
Yeah. Kevin, what are you going to wear?
To the radio show?
Yeah. Well, he's got to look good for the women.
Yeah, you got to dress it up a little
bit.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, I think I'm staying up in the sports studio, so I don't think I'll actually be meeting them. It'll be
If it's a dating game, you don't get to see
right,
the girls.
That's right, you can't see
till the end, though. Then
with the curtain.
Yeah, and then when there's a reveal, you got to come downstairs.
Oh, boy.
Right. All right. Well, now you put a lot of pressure on me. I'm going to go to my closet and see what I got to wear. I didn't think I had to get dressed up today.
So. Get his formal Redbird hoodie.
Right. The nice one.
Yeah.
My Kev, nice Redbird one.
Kev, you're nowhere near old enough to remember the actual dating game, but there is a point in the dating game where you have to wonder if the person who makes the choice or the person who was chosen is disappointed when they see each other for the first time.
Yeah.
So
you can't see them ahead of time, Kev.
You can't, no. So if the girl that you choose and you see her and she sees you for the first time and she says this, "Oh, hi." And she reaches out to shake your hand. It's not going to be a great night, I'm telling you right now.
Right. Or right, does one of those really awkward hugs you guys have talked about.
Yeah, the side hug.
Bad signs.
Yeah, if you get the Olay hug, hi. You know, like the bull that's passing.
Right. Sort of the sideways.
Sideways and out the door. That's Kevin Paul. Well, we miss you, buddy. You're doing a great job in the afternoon.
I miss you guys, too. I'll see you soon.
There Bye, Kev. Good
he
luck.
Really, he really doesn't.
Yeah, no, he doesn't miss.
He doesn't miss us. But I think they should
sideways in the parking lot.
He should lobby though to go to a different restaurant only because it's kind of like your parents going on the date with you.
Yeah.
You know, if it's Violetta's parents and Rose there, it'd just be weird. You know, they should go off by themselves to someplace, you know, quiet and secretive.
What are you advocating?
I don't know.
You know, we're trying to not.
Sorry, I don't know where I'm going with this.
It's 9:22.
Sorry, girls. Ahead of time.
We'll take a break, come back, and do more, because the Steve Cochran Show doesn't end until 10 on 720 WGN. It's 9:27. Laura Jane's here. Laura Jane, hi. You know, listen, if you want to put the saint list together in the city of Chicago, I'm nominating you.
Please don't.
Well, listen, what you do away from work is your own problem. But what you do at Gilda's Club every day and what your people do at Gilda's Club every day is nothing short of saintly and miraculous, and we thank you for it.
Well, thank you. It's our members that support one another that make the difference.
Before we talk about an event coming up that we're happily supporting, it's coming up on Thursday, June 23rd, called The Agents of Hope. Last time you were in,
yes,
you mentioned a young lady, and today is a very big day.
Yes, it is.
So tell the story.
So this young woman, her brother won the teen essay contest and wrote about her journey with cancer.
Right.
And we talked about it, and her mother and Lauren just happened to be brushing their teeth. And
listening.
Listening. Heard the mention, and started jumping up and down. I mean, I wish they had a video of it. But
really?
When,
yeah,
when I got the email, I thought, you know what would be really great would be to be able to give out a shout out and say, Lauren, congratulations on your last day of chemo. We look forward to seeing you on June 23rd. I wish you many days of horrible traffic.
Right.
So traffic was bad today, but you know what? I couldn't even get fazed by it. So.
Well, that's the thing, because you take somebody who's got her whole life ahead of her, like Lauren, who now can do her final dose of chemo, her final treatment today, and look at her whole life ahead of her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
So, and why wouldn't they be jumping up and down, right?
Right, yeah.
And it puts the rest of our problems in perspective. Like you said, traffic, who cares?
Right, exactly.
You'll get there.
Right.
Take a breath.
Right.
So God bless you, Lauren, you and your family, your mom and everybody. It's a very, very cool thing. And again, Gilda's Club, but for people that know the name but don't know, a free cancer support resource center, right?
Absolutely. Everything's free, and we're for everyone. I was just with your next guest who had a friend that went through the club and raved about it, and he thought it was just for breast cancer. So after 18 years, there's still a lot of awareness that we need to raise.
Well, you do. I'm going to give you credit about something else here. You do a remarkable job of being able to publicly tout what you guys do every day in the midst of running the organization, because you know this to be true. So often people have great causes, but there's so much work involved in doing the day-to-day of running the cause, you don't have time to tell people about what you're doing.
True, true.
So certainly we're happy to talk about Gilda's Club anytime, but you do a nice job of branding it for everybody here as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Where are you guys located?
We are at 537 North Wells. We still have a red door.
Yeah.
But we're also at Northwestern, Rush, Advocate Christ, Mount Sinai, and Laurie Children's, and we will come into any classroom, any workplace, and any faith community.
And again, it doesn't cost anything.
It's all free.
It's all free. And I think it's important for people to know, maybe you're on the way to a hospital now to visit somebody you love who's dealing with cancer. The hospitals all do really nice jobs of having resource people on staff, but those people are busy as well.
Correct.
So you're hearing us talk about this now. You want to know more about Gilda's Club. Before the person you love leaves the hospital to come home, just ask about Gilda's Club and ask about the hookup so they can come see you guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk about what's going to go on the 23rd.
We're going to have a fabulous event celebrating the lives of people that we've touched. It's at the Four Seasons. Anne Promajori is our honorary vice chair, and we will be celebrating Mesro Cares for their innovative cancer support program on site, and Dr. Stuart Goldman, who is truly one of the gifts in Chicago.
Yeah, and Mesro is a very generous organization.
Oh, absolutely.
Agents of Hope.
Correct.
It's Thursday, June 23rd at the Four Seasons Hotel. Many of my friends apparently are showing up at this, so I'm happy to be able to attend as well.
Great.
GildasClubChicago.org or 312-464-9900. You have a link on there for people that want to attend?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Agents of Hope, Thursday, June 23rd. Please support Gilda's Club. And congratulations, Lauren.
Absolutely. Go, Lauren.
There you go. What a big day for her. That's great news. All right, we're going to the big story? I'll take a break and come back for the big story. And then David Hochberg will join us on 720 WGN. Forgot to mention this from earlier, but the baby text names that came in, this goes back to Dean's segment where an actress has named her child Ode Mountain.
Yeah.
And I said if children were named after where they were conceived, like Ron Howard's kids. Jewel Parking Lot. If your child's name is Jewel Parking Lot. 312 texter says, is this weird? My kid's name's Holiday Inn. 847 texter says... Any one of my children could have been named Margarita.
That's funny. I really worry about the kids who are named at like Clark Addison.
Yeah, sure, of course. PSA, alcohol makes babies. That's from the texter as well. 815 texter. Geez, guess I should have named my two boys Motel and Bouncy House.
Don't tell them that.
And from the 708. And this goes to the theory of anybody that's been married a long time, you know that birthdays, holidays, and Father's Day are big days usually. But from the 708 texter, they'd call me Christmas Eve.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Credit cards company's like, okay, you want to play with us? We'll play with you. Okay, the minimum payment now goes from 2% minimum payment to 4%.
Seems pretty upset.
Okay, so now you got a person that's barely hanging on, $20,000 to $30,000 with credit card debt at 2% is $400 to $600, right? It's manageable.
It's so angry.
Now you just, what do these morons do? They turn it into $800 to $1,200 a month. Who the hell can afford that?
Stop yelling at me.
So what do they have to do? They have to go out and take out another credit card to pay the credit cards off.
I promise you, I don't look for his fuse and light it. I really don't.
Take it easy, champ.
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
Ah, Jake's a genius. Can't help himself. It's 9:43. David Hochberg's here.
How are you?
Isn't it great hearing yourself in that kind of wound-up state?
I appreciate that, Jake. You're awesome. Wait till you need a loan. We'll take care. Very well played.
All right, so David Hochberg, Pearl Mortgage. First off, I want to thank you for the idea that you gave us the other day, where you and I, a couple of days prior to Memorial Day, sat down and recorded a special hour for the show, which is a full couple of hours on podcast, celebrating Memorial Day.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. That was,
got a ton of great feedback from that, and that's right now on the G, right? It's online on WGN.
Yeah, we actually call it WGN. We use all three letters.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, it's WGN.
Pointing that out.
Yeah, and you can go to wherever WGN podcasts are, and you can pick it up right there. Is that labeled any particular way, Jake, or is it just Steve Cochran Show for the Memorial Day podcast?
If you just go to the Steve Cochran Show page, and it's right there for you.
Okay, cool. And nice job by Jake, who did the editing, the posting, and all that.
Great job.
But we had some great people in for that Memorial Day. And I mean this, and you know this, because you know, we're friends, whether you're willing to admit it or not. But you are one of the most fervently patriotic guys I know and supportive. And I think of guys like you and I and Mark Slavey and Mark Doyle. We're all kind of come from the same, you know, cut. We're guys who are not as young as we used to be, but not quite dead yet,
right,
who have great respect for those who serve and the families that they leave behind to serve. And we want to do whatever we can to help.
Absolutely. I was at the golf outing with you yesterday and sponsored a foursome, the Purple Heart foursome.
Mm-hmm.
One of the four, I think there were two or three foursomes that other organizations sponsored.
Yep.
And had the pleasure of sitting with four Purple Heart recipients and their wives, which was amazing. You know, Chad, I have his name right here, Chad Watson.
Chad's great. Chad helped run the organization for a while.
Lost his right leg.
Yep.
Fighting for this country. And a gentleman to the left of me, he was, how ironically crazy is this? He was an IED specialist in the Air Force, and he was working on defusing a bomb, and it exploded, and he lost his left arm.
Right.
And he sat at our table, and his legs are severely damaged, and he golfed in front of us. And this guy golfing with one arm was hitting the ball 200 yards straight down the fairway. It was an inspiration watching this, because he just, you know, they just don't give up.
And, No.
And they're just so glad to be alive and so patriotic.
Well, you think about everybody in that room, from General Borling to the enlisted men and women, to the special operators that were there. I mentioned this earlier, but the guy who shot bin Laden, the guy who pulled Saddam Hussein out of the hole and said, George W. Bush sends his regards. Just an amazing room. So Mark Slaby and the Illinois Patriot Education Fund, well done by you.
And I did talk with Mark. I stayed late, and Mark, you know, Mark was bouncing around because he had to, and make everybody happy and do the chairmanship type job, as everybody does who's ever run a golf outing. It's exhausting. And I sat there with him for about 15, 20 minutes after, told him the idea that Doyle and I had about the housing for veterans. And he's like, we're all over it. So next Thursday, Mark and I are going to have lunch to talk about it and get the Illinois Patriot Education Fund involved as well, and have that organization help Doyle and I get this thing off the ground. And he's like, that sounds like a phenomenal idea.
And as usual, I'm happy to be your big mouth.
Absolutely. No, and we're going to need as much help as we can. And this thing is going to, you know, I was sitting there at lunch, and Slavey, as you said, you met him at a golf outing, and you're like, you're nuts. It's never going to happen. And then I look around the room. He's got 15 to 20 people in blue shirts that are volunteers. He's got the entire organization structure established, set up. And the problem with, you know, Doyle and I, we don't have that structure. We could plug it into his structure and be up and running immediately.
He's a great organizational mind. You know, he's an entrepreneur, and he's able to make it all work and balance it all. And the reason I told him that I thought it was a difficult thing, because I play in 10 or 12 of these every summer, and I know the amount of work that goes into them. I used to have one with the Arthritis Foundation for years, and the amount of work and phone calls and everything that goes into it, it's incredible. But he has grown this thing in 5 or 6 years to the point where, you know, he can be one of the volunteers and not have to make all those phone calls and still take it to record levels. And again, raised a record amount of money yesterday.
Yeah. And the auctioneer was amazing. And he's the guy, as you said,
pulled Saddam Hussein's worst nightmare.
pulled him out of the
hole. Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. But he was funny as all get up. And it was just fun. It was good to be around people that get it. And more importantly, it was good to be around the college students and their families.
Yep.
And hearing what they had to say, that's actually receiving the scholarships.
Perpetual scholarships that go on. They're not just one-hitters.
And how it impacted their life and how it's currently impacting
Oh, you know who was there? Well, you saw him, the Jemersons.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Jemersons who were in here on the show, Dave, they were there yesterday as well.
Oh, okay.
Including Dad, who wasn't able to be on the radio, was there, did the keynote speech.
Yeah.
Wow. Very, so good all the way around.
Very inspiring.
How's the housing market?
Housing market is hot. New home sales are up. They keep talking about that rates are going to go up. And I just have to bring this up. The people that are sitting with home equity line of credits, we've talked about this in nauseam on the show, that are sitting there waiting for them to explode on themselves, okay? And if you took it out 10 years ago, one of two things are going to happen. It's either going to convert into a 5, 10, 15-year loan, and your payment's either going to double, triple, quadruple, or whatever the word is for, you know, going up five times. I can never say it, so I'm not even going to try to say it because it's more than two syllables. And or it's going to balloon, which means it's due. And you're going to have to pay it off. And a lot of people don't have 150 grand to pay off, 100 grand, 50 grand to pay off.
So refi it now.
Refi it now. Get the mortgage out and see what the hell's going on. You took it out 10 years ago. You're getting the letters from the bank saying, hey, it's coming. It's coming. You know, 90 days out, 75 days out, 60 days out, and I'm setting up another reel for Jake. But it's going to happen. What are you waiting for?
Didn't I just say refi it now?
Refi it up, but you got to pick up the phone to make the call to see what the hell's going on. I got people, my home equity line is expiring in July 1st. I got a problem. I'm like, okay, great. I'm like, what the hell you been doing for the past 120 days? Okay, it's like no secret. Right?
Steve, don't hurt him.
I pulled a muscle. You should pull a muscle. Yeah, you shouldn't pull a muscle. You should easily, after stretching, pick up the phone. And if you don't know where to look, I read these things all day long. I'll do it for free. Just scan it or just mail me a copy of your note.
On the note, because I've seen the note.
Right.
On the note, it says, please come see us.
Please call David Hochberg before he has an
aneurysm. Please come see us, or please call us immediately so we can talk about this.
Right.
For instance, I have one coming up in November.
Oh, really?
I have a meeting about this next week.
Okay. With your mortgage professional?
No, just a meeting.
Just a meeting?
Yeah, just a meeting.
With your psychiatrist?
Yeah.
You want to figure out how to deal with it?
Yeah, I know.
Talk about it?
No,
talk
a meeting
it
about what to do about to going through it. So you may be getting a call from me.
Okay. All right, great. Yeah. I look forward to that.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd pre-approve me.
I don't know.
I don't know if you'd post-approve me.
I'll have to screen the phone calls that day. But
the point is, don't mess around with it.
You have to get in front of this thing.
What are seconds, as we used to call them, or home equity lines? What's a rate you ought to be paying now?
Yeah, there are some banks right now. I send everybody over to my team over at First Midwest Bank. If you right now they're at like 3.5%. If you open up a checking account and you take out at least $25,000, there's no closing costs, and there's a 3-year early termination fee of like $300 to $400, but they're not charging you any closing costs, so
right.
It's a good trade-off, right? So
right.
If you got a ton of equity in your home, or you're thinking of moving shortly, or if you're planning on taking a trip or buying another home, or got a big event coming up like a wedding, a bat mitzvah, or something like that, and you just want to have extra cash laying around, it's a good option. Or if you're looking to move in a couple of years and you want to have the down payment, here's another option people do. Yeah, I can't sell my house and I want to buy another house, and I've got $300,000 of equity in my house. I'm like, maybe if you would have called me before you put the house on the market, because once you put the house on the market, you got a dead cat sitting there. And I'm sorry for you cat lovers, but it's a dead cat. You can't refinance. You can't access liquidity of a house that's on the market.
If I could just make sure people understand, no cats were killed during
this segment.
Andre's got a question, but I want to take a break before we do. We'll take a break.
I'm going to go to the other end of the room before I ask
a question. In the meantime, David will be heavily medicated during this commercial break. Yes, Dave, edit.
No,
you have nothing for me?
He's going with me to the other end.
Unless we're going in traffic.
He's administering the medication.
On 720 WGN.
Take it easy, champ.
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
$9.57. I have an arm, 11 years old. Interest rate's been good, but now starting to go up. Just adjusted to 3.5 in the next year. Should I refinance? David Hochberg.
Yes, you get into another arm right about where you're at now. Plus, you'll be kicking the amortization out another 30 years, which will keep the payment down because you will have eliminated about a third, about about 12 to 13% of your principal from when you started.
Pro Mortgage phone number for you is
312-751-1333, WGNDavid.com.
All right, I'm going to ask this from by the microphone, yeah, somewhat close screens to David. Up.
You're good.
You know I love you.
I know you do.
Should I pay off my car loan?
Depends. What rate do you have?
I don't know.
Well, here.
No, it's 3.99.
Okay, some people.
Which is high,
it's
I know.
A great
no,
question.
3.99 is not high for a car loan.
That's a great car loan, but if you could get a 3.5% home equity line of credit for the first year and 4%, check with your tax preparer to see if it's tax deductible, because I don't give tax advice.
Okay.
And yes, it, you know, there's a variability that it might go up eventually, but a lot of people are sitting in 6, 7, 8%
yeah.
car loans, 9% car loans. They have equity in their home now that the real estate market is turned around, so maybe doesn't might not make sense for you, but it's a great question for other listeners out there. So if you want, I use a team of ladies over at First Midwest Bank. They're phenomenal. They're very receptive, and they get back to people, and they take care of all of our clients. I sent them over $10 million worth of business last year. I get nothing from it. I don't make any money from it. It's a service that we provide. Yes, we do HELOCs, home equity line of credits at Pearl Mortgage, but the ladies at First Midwest Bank give better rates, so I send people over there.
There
you got to get Bill and Wendy in here, but if I'm about to lose a house in a foreclosure or file a Chapter 7, what's the time frame before that's behind me?
Yeah, Chapter 7, if you keep making the mortgage payment, it's 2 years after Chapter 7, but if you've missed mortgage payments prior to it, it's 3 years to secure an FHA loan.
And Julie Detweiler from Infinite Realty Group wants to help out with the Veterans Project.
So phenomenal. 312-751-1333. We're going to, you know, Slavey, he doesn't mess around. Doyle doesn't mess around. We're going to get this thing up and running, and it's going to be floating. We're going to
take
care
about it here.
Yes, absolutely.
David Hochberg.
Thank you.
WGNDavid.com as well. And again, thank you for the Memorial Day show.
Thank you.
A minute before Bill and Wendy next.